Well, we're still here, so let's talk about it. Welcome to 2023, episode one of our year of conversation. And I think what better way to start a conversation than to talk about Death Cafe? It is why I got started doing this in the first place. The medium was different, of course, because I was meeting people in person. I advertised through the local newspaper, the local magazine, put news releases out to the press, and people came by word of mouth as well. Since beginning that process in 2016, I have grown a great group of people who enjoy talking about dying and death, people who talk about whatever they want to. That is the beauty of Death Cafe. There's no agenda, there's no topic, there's nothing that I want to teach or I want you to buy or any of those things. That can be really freeing when sometimes one might be walking into this situation with no idea what this thing called a death cafe is, except that maybe they were told there'd be cake and tea, which wasn't why I went in. If you have listened to me for any length of time, I have explained that I went to my first death cafe to help a friend who had been invited to attend, but was really not feeling great about it. I offered to go with her to be a moral support, and sometimes you just need a buddy. So I was that buddy. She didn't love it. I was hooked, and I went regularly following that first time. Eventually, I became a host or facilitator myself, and all that means is that I arranged the location. I brought the snacks and the tea or water, whatever. I organized the people, and I got things going if the conversation lagged in any way. Let me tell you a little bit more about the Death Cafe. So there is a man named John Underwood from England, and he started the Death Cafe. He called himself a death entrepreneur. He was a computer guy, and he began this movement because he wanted to tear down the stigma behind talking about death and dying. His website is deathcafe.com. In looking recently at the website, it appears that there are maybe not as many hosts as there used to be, but plenty of death cafes online and in person still today around the world. That, I think, is an indicator of how important this movement has been and what it is becoming, not just in Death Cafe, but also in LinkedIn, for example. I believe I am now following 4 or 5 organizations, whether it's a hospice or some end-of-life organization, whose sole purpose is to move forward the conversation, to have this death-positive way of thinking. Let me give you a little history of John Underwood. So John began the first Death Cafe in September of 2011 in England. He followed the writings of somebody named Bernard Cretez, who was a Swiss sociologist, and really believed and said that talking about death leads to authenticity. He organized the first Café Mortel, which is what he called it, in Neuchâtel in 2004, aiming to break the quote-unquote tyrannical secrecy surrounding the topic of death. Since then, death cafes had spread across Europe, North America, Australasia. I know that there are so many others in countries I haven't even found yet. Africa, actually, was one that I saw recently. Lizzie Miles was the first one who hosted a death cafe in the United States, and that was in 2014. They really are worldwide, and if you ever go to the website, you can plug in a zip code and find the one nearest you. So what is a death cafe besides tea and cake? Well, it's an opportunity for a community to gather, talk about life and death, and have some tea and cake. And what's cute about that and why it's such an important element of a death cafe is because in Britain, they drink tea, right? And they eat cake. If you've ever had high tea, you know there's no shortage of either one. I think it also helps maybe ease some of the discomfort or uncertainty of a death cafe. Cake can bring people together. Having some tea can warm you at the same time. So the objective of the death cafe is to raise awareness through open conversation about a topic that, you know, we have talked about here is still pretty taboo. in our culture at least, on the Western culture. A death cafe is a group-directed discussion of issues about death and dying. There's no agenda. There's no objective or theme, except if you want to say death and dying could be the theme. But I would argue that point too, because of many of the death cafes that I have held didn't end up talking about death and dying at all. This is a discussion group rather than any kind of grief support group or any counseling session, and that is usually said right up front so people know what they're getting into. They're always not for profit. I don't know very many who charge at all, and when they do, it's to cover the cost perhaps of the rental space or to purchase the tea and the cake and the cups, etc. It's always stressed that this is a respectful, confidential, safe space to have these discussions with no intention of leading people to any conclusion, product, or course of action. To that end, books are not recommended. Public speakers or guest speakers are not usually present. Once I did play a movie for my attendees, but it was done outside of the death cafe. So for us, we played the movie, had some dinner while we watched the film, and then afterwards, we went into a death cafe. Of course, the idea was that this movie would spur some conversation, but it by no means created a theme or any sense of needing to stick to the contents of the film in this death cafe. Actually, the conversation was lively. People who had not even otherwise attended a death cafe came to see the film and stayed for the second half. Unfortunately, in 2017, John Underwood died. His wife, his children, and many beloved friends miss him terribly. And his wife and his daughter continue the Death Cafe today. They help run the website, and we, as members of that website, can still go on and schedule Death Cafes whenever we want to have one. His wife believed so strongly in John's belief system and idea about destigmatizing the death conversation that she agreed to continue what John started and encourage the open conversations. And many of us Death Cafe hosts around the world continue to be inspired by John and what he started. This podcast was born from that. We've talked about COVID and how so many things were different. And one of the things that were different was the ability to meet in person. His family, along with many of the hosts of Death Cafe, created virtual Death Cafes. So now you can be in Africa and attend a death cafe in New York if you choose to do so. Many are still meeting in person. I do not presently meet in person, mostly born out of COVID, but also I believe that, I don't know, I can't say I felt called to do something different, but maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's the best way to describe it. I felt I needed a change. But the Death Cafe is still at the foundation of why I am sitting here talking to you about death and dying. It is in my heart. I don't want to say every fiber of my being, because that's a little dramatic, but it's in my heart. It's in my mind. I talk to people a lot informally outside of Death Cafe. So why not approach people this way in this podcast and in my blogs, to be able to further this conversation, much like John did and his family since his passing. I've collected a lot of things for you, and I'm going to be sharing them through the year and beyond, provided I'm still here. If you're intrigued at all or curious about what in the world happens at a death cafe, I encourage you to check it out. Go to a virtual meeting or attend a meeting that's near you. You won't be disappointed. You might actually have a really fun time. And I bet you the cake and tea will be delicious. Now, as I've said, death conversations can be a little unsettling, maybe a little frightening, and definitely uncertain. It was for me. I had no idea what I was walking into. Let me lay it out for you. I think I've talked about this before, but I'm just going to help you create this mental picture. So this was like a small classroom, maybe 8 to 10 seats in it with some tables. So a real small meeting space. There was a table against the wall where all the goodies lay. There was a little bowl there if you wanted to drop a dollar in for a cup of coffee, pick up a cupcake, whatever you wanted. There was no compulsion at all that I felt to contribute or even partake in what was being offered. But it was really nice to see it there. I think that can be such an icebreaker, such a comfort maker to have a little bit of food and drink handy, especially if you're walking into a room of people you've never met. At least you can busy yourself stirring your coffee or, you know, talking about the cookies or whatever that might be. We sat around tables. I came in horribly late because I was lost, so it had already begun. But what was happening was three groups of people were sitting around the room, clumped at different ends of the table, and someone off into the corner just so that they could talk among themselves without distraction. The host or the facilitator connected me with a group that was short a person, obviously because they'd been waiting for me. So I sat with them. And as it turned out, these women were a group of hospice nurses, which I didn't know. I didn't even really have much experience with hospice at that time, except with my mom and my dad. When I sat with them, there was a bowl with strips of paper inside. The first person picked up a strip of paper, read the statement on the paper, and then we talked about it. My section was all female, so that woman began to talk about whatever was addressed. I'll give you an example of a conversation starter. What would you want to have on your epitaph? Well, an epitaph is a gravestone or a marker that says, you know, like, here lies so-and-so, born, died, the years, or, you know, beloved husband or great friend or whatever you want to have on that. And so that's a pretty interesting little topic. Who thinks about that stuff generally, right? Except maybe a bunch of nurses who work in hospice. Maybe they talk about it a lot. So then it went around the room. Then when the conversation started to stall a little bit, the next person grabbed a piece of paper. And let me see, what's another one that would be out there? What do you think would happen if we never died? So toss that one around with your group. My comment was something like, if we never die, we just keep collecting wounds, you know? And I imagined this headless body just kind of wandering around, or, you know, limbs missing, or just scars upon scars upon scars, but still living. I don't know. That was just kind of weird, but, you know, that was what I said. And then after that one died down, then the next person picked up a slip of paper and we continued around the room. This happened with the other two groups that were seated there. And the facilitator's job, it was to walk around, and if it looked like things were stalling, then the facilitator could maybe offer another slip of paper or maybe hear what the last person was saying and offer their own opinion, which then could stimulate further conversation. This is good because when you have sometimes a table full of strangers, they don't know each other's energy and maybe conversation can stall. That didn't really ever seem to be the case in any of the death cafes that I attended or hosted. Actually, the biggest problem, I would say, if you even want to call it that, was making sure that everyone got a turn to speak. Some people talk more than others. Some people don't want to talk, and that's totally fine. No one is forced or pressured to talk if they don't choose to. At the end of the discussion, whatever the time limit was decided by the host, a representative from each group could stand up and maybe discuss one of the questions that they had at their table. And it gives the entire room a chance to hear the opinions and thoughts of perhaps a question that they didn't have in their section, and vice versa with the other participants. What ends up happening is this enriching, almost bonding, and kind of unifying experience, because we are all here to talk about death and dying. Most of us maybe have thought about it, maybe not, but by the end of the evening, we all have had something to share or at least hear that might be new or interesting information to us. It made me want to sign up for the next one. and go seek out other groups as well. Being in San Diego, I had lots of options. I did settle in finally on one particular group that I liked. I became friends with the facilitator. Her name was Karen. She is still down there. I think her business was helping families find nursing care or assisted living, etc. But they're still having the groups in San Diego. As a matter of fact, one of the couples that I trained with to learn how to do a virtual death cafe is still hosting them. I actually signed up for one because I can't wait to see how it's done. I went through the training in 2020, but I never actually held a virtual cafe. So I'm excited. And I'll tell you all about it after I've attended. It's not for another month or so. There's more that are happening within the next week, but I really wanted to just see how these folks that I trained with are doing in their virtual death cafe. So that's a death cafe. It sounds kind of weird, and a lot of people have said to me through the years, you should change that name. You should tell them to change that name. That's a weird name. Weird or not weird, it tells the story. It invites curiosity and welcomes questions and welcomes different points of view or no point of view at all. And there's always cake and tea. What more could you ask for if you're going to talk about death and dying? It is a special place that I have in my heart for Death Cafe, but I've definitely moved from that because I want to be able to share books and I want to be able to play films and documentaries or recommend people, other podcasters or websites, for example, who have very important things to say about death and dying. And because the Death Cafe model is a completely open agenda with none of those representatives maybe being a part of it, I just felt like I wanted to do more. There is still a place for Death Cafe, however, and I'm excited, like I said, to attend the one next month. I hope that you'll find one. If you have questions or you need help navigating the website, you can shoot me an email. My email is grimt.com or whilewerestillhere.com. And I'll be glad to point you in the direction of deathcafe.com. I can even point you to my particular page that shows where I'm located. Although I don't have any on the schedule, you can at least read a little bio about me. I hope that you get encouraged to start the conversations, and if the Death Cafe is one way to get you going, then I've done my job for this week. Thanks for listening today. You can go to my website for more articles, little news pieces, or a transcript of this podcast. The website is whilewerestillhere.com. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send me an email too. Thanks again, and until next time, take care.